Going to be continuing our study in Genesis this morning. We ended Wednesday in chapter 43, so we'll be picking up there shortly. But just to get the context of where we're at, in chapter 42, Joseph's brothers had been sent down to Egypt for what purpose? They were going to buy grain. And why did they need to go down to Egypt to buy grain? Okay, there's a famine going on, and Egypt is the only place that has food, and so Jacob sends his sons down to Egypt to buy food. So in their first trip to Egypt, do all the brothers come back? Who stays behind?
Simeon.
Okay, and what's the conditions of Simeon being released? Okay, the brothers have to bring Benjamin back to Egypt in order for Simeon to be released. So the brothers get home, or as they're going back home from Egypt on this first trip, what surprise do they find?
Okay,
the money that they had supposedly spent to buy grain has been put back into their grain sacks. And how did everybody feel about that when they saw that this money was put back?
They were afraid.
Why would they be afraid? That's great. That's like free grain.
They were accused of being spies and they had their money back. Sure, they were quite upset about
how they were going to get it. Yep. So, like Freddie said, the brothers had been accused of being spies initially by the governor of Egypt, and so now they have their money back. So, this is kind of a second offense. Where they may be accused of theft. So they return back home in chapter 42. And in 43, we talked about Wednesday that Jacob's family runs out of food as the famine continues. We know that the famine is going to last for 7 years. So Jacob's going to tell his sons in chapter 43, it's time for you all to go back to Egypt to buy more grain. Now Judah reminds him that in order for them to go back and get more grain, the condition that the governor made was that they had to bring Benjamin, or what Joseph says, or you will not see my face. And we know that if they're not going to see Joseph's face, they're not going to get any of the grain, because Joseph was very hands-on in this process. He managed the sale of grain to people's coming to purchase it. So initially, Jacob's going to refuse and says, no, you can't take Benjamin back with you. Judah says, well, we're not going to go if you're not going to let Benjamin go back with us, because the governor's already told us. So Jacob talks about how he tells his sons, you shouldn't tell them that you had a brother, that you had a father. And I was thinking Wednesday, when I had just looked at chapter 42 and 43, that the brothers say that they had no choice, they had to, because he's asked about it. And I was thinking that they had made this part up. But we see in chapter 44 that it seems like there was more to the conversation, like what Dale was saying, that in chapter 42 we don't see the full conversation, but in fact the brothers had been questioned on whether they had a brother and a father. But the brothers say they had no choice. They had to give this information up to the governor to prove that they weren't spies. There we go. Okay, so chapter 43, we're going to read this part, chapter 43, verses 8 through 10. And Judah said to Israel, his father, send the boy with me, and we will arise that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones. I will be a pledge of his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice. So we talked about Wednesday night that they would have bought a substantial amount of grain to last them for, we don't know exactly how long, but they certainly wouldn't have planned to buy grain, come home, and then a couple weeks later go back to Egypt to buy more. And also, this is This is not just walking a couple miles down to Egypt. This is going from the land of Canaan over to the west into Egypt. So this is a lengthy journey. But Judah says here, we could have gone there and come back twice if we had not delayed. So if we had immediately gone back when we first returned home, we could have been back twice by now. And he also says here in verses 8 through 10 that he's agreeing that the boy, if Benjamin here, if Jacob is willing to let Benjamin go with Judah, that Judah is going to take responsibility for him. And if you think back to when Joseph was younger, right before he was put into the pit, and he ended up being sold into slavery, it was kind of Reuben who was the brother that was not as bad as the others. And here we see Judah willing to accept some responsibility and show a little bit of maturity here, saying that he would take responsibility for Judah. And we'll see this kind of play out more in chapter 44 on what his responsibility requires of him. And so remember at this time that Simeon is still in prison, the brother that was left behind on the condition that Benjamin was returned. So we talked Wednesday night about Jacob seemed to be willing to let one of his sons stay in prison so that he could avoid any risk to losing Benjamin. He says in chapter 42, essentially, that he considers Simeon to be dead, that he's lost another son. Right, verses 11 through 14, chapter 43, says, "Then their father Israel said to them, 'If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the man, a little balm and a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take also your brother and arise, go again to the man. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, and may he send back your other brother and Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved.'" So this time they're going to go back. Jacob suggests they take a gift to Joseph, sort of a best of the land kind of gift. Doug made the point Wednesday that these were items that were native to the land of Canaan and not to the land of Egypt, so they would have been delicacies for someone in Egypt. And he says in verse 12 to take double the money back with you. So why would they need to take double the money back this time?
Pay for what they had gotten previously and make sure they covered the expense for the new produce they were about to purchase.
Sure. And it's been a while since they've been back to Egypt, but they're not planning on Joseph just forgetting about this and no one being aware that some money was missing. So they're going to make sure that they can repay for what they bought initially so that they can't be accused of being thieves. Well, sure. I mean, that could be the case also. But the main reason they're bringing the double portion or extra is they've got to pay back what they were given. Okay. That could be, that's the way it reads there. In verse 15, we'll read in just a second. Well, I'll read it now. So the men took this present, and they took double the money with them and Benjamin. So it says that's what they ended up taking was double the money. So whether it's they've got to account for prices of commodities increasing, or it's to repay, or it's for both, they're taking more money with them. It seems like they're taking more with them than what they would necessarily need to just buy one portion of grain. Okay, so we're going to continue reading on. Verses 16 through 18, "When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, 'Bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon.' The man did as Joseph told him and brought the men to Joseph's house. And the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house. And they said, "It is because of the money which was replaced in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may assault us and fall upon us and make us servants and seize our donkeys." So they're coming before Joseph here. They brought Benjamin, as that was the condition of them being able to do business in Egypt. And Joseph sees that Benjamin has come with them, and he tells his steward, kind of his right-hand man, to bring them into his house and to have a meal prepared, because they're going to dine with him. And then the steward goes, and he tells the brothers that they are to dine in the governor's house. So this is a kind of unusual request, the brothers being common people, Joseph being essentially royalty, part of the aristocracy, inviting these common foreigners into his house for a meal. And they immediately assume the worst in verse 18, that this is kind of a trap to get them to come into his house, and that what's going to end up happening is that they're going to be made servants and their donkeys are going to be taken away from them. They're going to be trapped as prisoners in Egypt. So verse 19, so they went up to the steward of Joseph's house and spoke with him at the door of the house and said, "Oh, my lord, we came down the first time to buy food, and when we came to the lodging place, we opened our sacks, and there was each man's money in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we had brought it again with us, and we have brought our money down with us to buy food. We do not know who put the money in our sacks." He replied, and this is the steward here, "Peace be to you," or "peace to you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money." Then he brought Simeon out to them. And when the man had brought the men into Joseph's house and given them water, and they had washed their feet, and when he had given their donkeys fodder, they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that they should eat bread there. So the brothers start to tell the steward, as they've been invited into Joseph's house, because they're afraid that something bad is about to befall them. They're going to be being made slaves in Egypt. So they're trying to get ahead of that and tell the steward, "Here's what happened to us. You know, we were on our way back and we found our money had been put back." And the steward says to them, "You know, don't worry. We got your money. You paid for what you got. But it's that in fact that your God and the God of your father has put treasure in your sacks for you. So this money just came out of nowhere and appeared in your sack." So I find it interesting that after the steward says that to them, we don't see an account of them looking at each other puzzled or saying that, you know, this is just a trap, for money just to appear in their sack out of nowhere. And it seemed to be the amount that they should have paid for the grain was the amount that ended up in their sack. But anyways, the brothers, they go and clean up and they feed their donkeys and they get ready for Joseph to come into his home where they're going to have this meal. They prepare this gift that they've brought from Canaan to give to the governor. And in verse 26, when Joseph came home, so Joseph, it came home from where? Where would he have been at up to this point? Right. He's out where he's a working man. He is out making sure the grain is being sold. So they brought into the house to him the present that they had with them and bowed down to him to the ground. So again, we see again that Joseph's dream coming true. Again, they're bowing before him. Verse 27, and he inquired about their welfare and said, "Is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive?" They said, "Your servant, our father, is well. He is alive." And they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son." So the first thing that they do when Joseph comes in is they're bowing before him and presenting him this gift. So they're putting their best foot forward, if Joseph is intending on harming them, but they're trying to soften that by appearing humble and offering a gift. Joseph asks of their father, is he well, since they mentioned him the last time they were there. And he sees Benjamin. From trying to understand how much older Joseph was than Benjamin, what I was able to determine is that he might have been 8 to 10 years older than Benjamin. Some people say that Benjamin was not even born yet when Joseph was taken captive, but the account that we read in Genesis, it doesn't read that way. It reads that Benjamin's birth occurs before Joseph receives his coat and is put into the pit and sold into slavery. But based on putting all these timelines of the different patriarchs together, that probably about 8 to 10 years difference. So if you think about Joseph being 17 years old when he was put into the pit, Benjamin would have been a young child. So Joseph's around close to 40 at this point. So, you know, where he saw a child when he had last left Canaan, now he sees a grown man before him. So he asked if this is the brother you spoke of, because he probably wouldn't recognize someone that was a child when he last saw him and now a man standing before him. So he learns that this is Benjamin. Obviously, he's happy to see him because Benjamin is his brother. This is his brother. They shared their mother, Rachel. And while we read about in Genesis that the other men are his brothers, they were from either his aunt or from they were children of Jacob's servants who would not have had the same status as the brothers of Jacob's actual wives. So they certainly would have, he would have shared, you know, a special bond with Benjamin.
Evan,
yes?
Benjamin can't be buried then, because when we go on a couple more chapters, he has children that go to Egypt. So if he's mature enough to have had children, you know, he can't be just a really young boy.
Sure. Yeah, and so Joseph's probably around 40, given that he was 30 when he was governor, I believe, and then we're past the years, the good years, 7 years, and then we're into the famine now, about 2 years. So he's close to 40. So Benjamin is probably in his early 30s here. But they always refer to him as the boy, the boy, the boy. Now, by cultural standards, he was a young man and he was a boy. I think you were considered a young man maybe until around like age 40 or older in that culture. But he's also referred to as the boy. He is the baby. He's the youngest son of Jacob. So verse 29, he sees Benjamin, and this is the first time he's seen him, after all, that Benjamin didn't make the trip the last time. And so in verse 30, Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber and he wept there. So he's so overcome with emotion of seeing his brother that he leaves the room, goes to a place by himself where he can weep. So verses 31 through 34. Then he washed his face and came out. And controlling himself, he said, "Serve the food." So it says he washed his face and came out. Since Joseph was a wealthy man, he probably would have had makeup on. So that's what it talks about. He's having to wash his face. He's probably having to maybe wash his makeup off that's smeared on his eyes and come back. So he says, "Serve the food." After all, the brothers are there to share this meal and be his guest. And in verse 32, they served him by himself. Joseph is what it's talking about here. And them by themselves, the brothers, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they set before him the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth, and the men looked at one another in amazement. Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was 5 times as much as any of theirs. And they drank and were merry with him. So an interesting setup in the way that the meal is served. And I'll share with you some of my thoughts and some things that I had found while I was trying to understand the way the seating arrangements worked. And I'd like to hear your comments as well, if someone maybe had done some really deep diving on this, perhaps. So Joseph sits by himself during this meal. And the brothers, they sit by themselves at another table or another area of the room. And then there's Egyptians here, so these are probably other court officials here dining with Joseph. And they're sitting at a table that's separate from Joseph, and it's also separate from the brothers. And it says that in verse 32, that it's an abomination for Egyptians to eat with Hebrews. So why would it be an abomination for Egyptians to eat with Hebrews? Some things that I have found, the most common idea is that it's because the Hebrews would have eaten cattle, and that cattle was special, as the various deities of Egypt had animal counterparts, where if you've seen pictures of them, usually there's an animal head on a man's body. And so the animal figures of those gods and goddesses were considered holy. And so cattle was a holy animal to the Egyptians. However, I was reading a thesis paper that somebody had wrote, so I don't know what authority they had or knowledge, but I was reading about that Egyptians, according to archaeological finds, and you can determine what their diets were based on what bones are found in certain places, that they would have eaten cattle. And I can't tell you whether that's true or not. I just read it somewhere, so it may not be true. And another thing that I had read was also about the Hebrews' practice of sacrificing cattle. And then a third idea about why it would have been an abomination for the Egyptians to eat with the Hebrews was because the Hebrews were uncivilized people. They had beards. They wore dirty clothes. The people of Egypt, on the other hand, were very clean. They were civilized. They shaved. They wore makeup. They wore wigs. They might even put a lump of ointment in their wig so it could smell pleasant throughout the day. So think of like almost maybe like a pilgrims and an Indians kind of thing, where the Indians are thought to be savages and while the European settlers are thought to be civilized. That could be something as well. Then another thing I read was that being shepherds, that these men probably would have stunk, and the Hebrews and Canaanites generally were foul-smelling, as they were not clean and civilized like the Egyptians. So anyway, those are some things that I had read about why they didn't want to eat together and why it was an abomination. Has anyone else read about this or studied this before and have any thoughts on it one way or the other?
I read some of the same things you did, that it had to do with the difference in their lifestyles. And, you know, that's very typical culturally. It's the us and them kind of situation, you know. Joseph's brothers would have been the outsiders.
Sure.
And wouldn't have been probably as familiar with the Egyptian customs and traditions. So it makes sense that they would say, they would consider them uncouth or barbarian, much like, you know, later on the Romans and the Greeks and Romans did, people that were not part of their culture.
Yeah, and so we have, that maybe explains about the brothers sitting at their own table. And so the next thing I thought about was, why is Joseph eating at the separate table, yet the food from his table is what is served to the brothers? So some thoughts on why Joseph is sitting at this table. Obviously, he is the highest ranking member in the room, and so it probably would have been customary for royalty or the highest ranking member. If this was a state meal where Pharaoh was, Pharaoh probably would have sat by himself to show that he was the most important in the room. So that's probably why Joseph is eating alone. Some scholars write that Joseph was considered a Hebrew by the Egyptians, and so he couldn't eat with the Egyptians. Now, based on what little I know, that doesn't seem to be the case, because Joseph is the second in command in all of Egypt. So it's not likely that when it comes to mealtime, he's going to be ostracized and having to be considered an outsider, being the second in command. So that's probably not the case. It's probably more likely that it's just due to the fact that he's royalty. Sure. Yeah, and he also he was given an Egyptian name. He married an Egyptian, so it's not likely that he's considered an outsider here and why he sits separately. So the last point about this meal that I find interesting was that the brothers are served from his table. So I was trying to read about why were they served from his table and not served from a common table or served from the Egyptian guest table. Some folks that I read that write about this subject say that it was because the Egyptians didn't eat meat and that Joseph is eating meat and the brothers are going to eat meat and that's why they're served separately. But the same article that I read about that was actually disagreeing with that point, saying that the Egyptians ate meat. So I don't have a good explanation for why they were served from Joseph's table other than that they were his personal guests. That may answer it.
And he would have had the choice of foods.
Sure.
His guess that he's going to be giving them choice portions from his own table.
Okay. That's a good point. So that's enough about what they ate and why they ate the way they ate. But I just wanted to share some insight with that as I find some verses in Genesis I find that are interesting to try to learn a little bit more. So verse 33, the brothers set, the way they seat are seated is by the order of their age. And Benjamin's portion, he gets five times as much food as the other brothers. So it's interesting that they do that because he is the youngest, so he's not the most important of all the brothers. The oldest should be considered the most senior and the most special among those guests, but it's actually Benjamin, the youngest, who's treated as the most important of the guests here. And obviously that's because it's Joseph's brother. Any other comments on chapter 43 before we move on? That's a good point. I had overlooked that, not considered that, on that it was Joseph the one actually making the choice. I thought maybe they just sat down and that's just what they. But that's excellent. That's an excellent point, and that's why they were in amazement because someone other than them knew who was the oldest and who was the youngest. And so at the end of the chapter. It says they drank and were merry with him. So everything seems to be going well. They have brought back the money that they were given. They came to Joseph's house thinking that something bad was about to happen. They were going to be made servants. But at the end of the chapter, they are feasting with the governor and having a good time. So that brings us to chapter 44. So Joseph is... This is kind of the final test that Joseph is setting up here for his brothers. Verses 1 through 3, then he commanded the steward of his house, fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. So we've heard him do this before. In verse 2, and put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest with his money for the grain. And he did as Joseph told him. As soon as the morning was light, the men were sent away with their donkeys. So just as they had done before, their money was put back in their sacks. But this time, Joseph adds another element to the game, and he wants his silver cup to go into the sack of Benjamin. And it says in verse 3 that the men, they head on their way when it was light. So they feasted with the governor, and the next morning they were going to return home. In verse 4 through 5, they had gone only a short distance from the city. Now Joseph said to his steward, "Up, follow after the men, and when you overtake them, say to them, 'Why have you repaid evil for good? Is it not from this that my Lord drinks, and by this that he practices divination? You have done evil in doing this.'" So Joseph wants his steward to go out and stop his brothers. And again, they're going to be accused of stealing this time. But it's going to be about taking this cup is what is the special item. Not the money, but about taking this cup. And Joseph instructs his steward to tell him that it's his divination cup. And also, not only the divination cup, but the cup that he drinks from. But, you know, just a cup that you drink from, that's kind of a common thing. But what's going to make this a more serious accusation is that this is actually used for divination. So what is divination? So what people would have done with these cups is you might put gold and then other maybe gemstones or some type of stones with different figures and letters or words that mean something. And you can, what the Egyptians would do and other cultures that practice this using a cup, you would recite some kind of incantation, and supposedly a demon or a spirit or one of your deities that you worshipped would tell you what you want to know by utilizing these stones that have symbols drawn on them in the cup. So something to that effect is what the steward is going to tell the brothers they have taken from him. So obviously it would have been an important object if Joseph really practiced divination. And they would have had no reason to expect that he didn't, given that they think he's an Egyptian. And if you think back to some previous chapters we looked at, we know Lot practiced divination. So this was widespread in the Near East, just part of the culture. But we'll say that it's not likely that Joseph is practicing divination. We know that he was able to interpret dreams, and when he was asked about how he was able to do that, he always gives credit to God, and that God allows him to be able to do this. So he would have no need for divination. He wouldn't need to practice really a sense of idolatry and sorcery in order to be able to do what God had allowed him to do through his will. So this is more—it's more of a thing about trying to scare the brothers and making them understand this is a serious charge that you have stolen this divination cup. Okay, so verses 6 through 13. So the steward is going after the brothers. In verse 6, when he overtook them, he spoke to them with these words, and it's the words that Joseph had told them to say. So accusing them of taking this cup, and that don't you know it's the cup of divination. Verse 7, they, who is the brothers, said to him, "Why does my Lord speak such words as these? Far be it from your servants to do such a thing. Behold, the money that we found in the mouths of our sacks, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? Whichever of your servants is found with it shall die, and we also will be my Lord's servants." He said, "Let it be as you say. He who is found with it shall be my servant, and the rest of you shall be innocent." Then each man quickly lowered his sack to the ground, and each man opened his sack. And he searched, beginning with the eldest and ending with the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they tore their clothes, and every man loaded his donkey, and they returned to the city. So the steward is saying exactly to the brothers what Joseph has directed him to say. Accuse them of stealing the cup. Since the brothers don't know anything about it, the steward had done this, or the people filling the sacks had done this without their knowledge, they say, "Well, we didn't take it. Why would we take it?" And not only did we not take it, but last time we were given our money back, and we brought it back to repay this time. So certainly not the character of a thief. And the brothers say, you know, whoever has this cup is going to die. And the rest of us will agree to be your servants, because they're certain that they're not going to find this cup amongst their sacks. But the steward says here in verse 10, you know, don't have to worry about someone's going to die. It'll just be whoever has the cup will be the servant, will become a slave, and then the rest of you will be innocent. So they all lower their sacks, and they're all searched, and the cup is found in Benjamin's sack, just as Joseph had planned. So verse 13, all the men, they're very upset by this. They tear their clothes, and they all go back and return to the city. Verses 14 through 17, when Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there. They fell before him to the ground. So it's almost like Joseph was planning this as he was still in the house. He hadn't gone out yet to go about the business of selling grain. He's still at his house. In verse 15, Joseph said to them, "What deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination?" And Judah said, "What shall we say to my lord? What shall we speak? Or how can we clear ourselves? God has found out the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are my lord's servants, both we and he also in whose hand the cup has been found." But he said, "Far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father." So verse 15, Joseph is saying, don't you know that a man like me can practice divination? I don't think Joseph's saying here that he actually does. I think this is part of the kind of fear tactics, again, making it seem like this is a serious charge that they have, that you thought you were foolish enough to think that, you know, just because of who I am, I wouldn't practice divination, so you thought you could get away with this. In verse 16, Judah says something very interesting. He says, "God has found out the guilt of your servants." Now, they hadn't taken anything. Although the cup was found in Benjamin's sack, they hadn't found anything, or they had not taken anything that wasn't theirs. They had not done what they're accused of being, that is, of thieves. So maybe what is it? What is the guilt of the servants or the brothers that God has found out? Yep, so all those years ago, they have never, it doesn't seem like they've ever repented of that. They've never told Jacob what they did, and they've continued to lie to him till this day, and giving him the assumption that Joseph has died or was killed by an animal. So it seems like now, Judah finally understands that God knows what we did, and he's saying in a way that now we're being repaid for it. Yes, go ahead, Bruce. Yeah, and it's interesting, in chapter 42 through 44, the focus stops being on Joseph, and it starts being on the brothers, and being about the conversations that they have with each other, and about their attitudes, and how they react, how they interact with Jacob, and how they interact with each other. It seems like that's the reason Joseph has done all of this, is to test the character of his brothers. And so we'll see that play out. We'll pick up Wednesday and finish this chapter and move on to 45 as well. But thank you for your comments this morning.